podcast. What time it is, listeners?
Yay!
Onk radio time.
I wish I could do like the sound of like screaming children right now, but I can't.
I'm pretty sure we had cheering children in a recent episode. Oh, yeah, for some reason.
I think so, too. I know back when we did the show at the college, during the college days, we had a sweep of, like, cheering children, and then there was, like, a velociraptor roar, and they were screaming or something.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the context. I don't think there was any.
All those sound bites we made for that show were not, they did not have any context at all.
No, not at all.
I think I might have played that one in our reunion episode.
Flashback episode?
Yeah.
I think you did. That's funny. It's funny, too, because one of the XM stations I listen to, XMU, has a sweep that has children, where it's like babies laughing and like giggling, and it's like, XMU, no kidding around.
Puns. Well, ours was, we had that one that you just mentioned, but then there was the other one with all the babies crying. And said something about don't be a baby, listen to funk radio. So I don't know how to transition that into what we're talking about today.
Oh, there is none.
Just like the old show.
Were you listeners, were you a baby in the 80s? Then you might remember.
But if they were a baby, they wouldn't remember it.
This is true. They'd have to be like a baby in like the 70s or maybe 60s.
Yes.
Terrible.
So Kyle.
Yes.
These days, when you want to pick and choose songs that you like, what do?
I either go to Spotify or YouTube or SoundCloud or iTunes or Google Music or Mixcloud or
Amazon.
Sites. Amazon, thank you, yeah. Or other sites that have things to download.
Download our stream, yeah. But before the age of the internet, Kyle, like when we were growing up in the 90s, how could people do that?
With those goofy little hit clips things that you put
in. Yeah.
Remember that shit?
Yeah.
Honest to God,
I still want to do an episode about hit clips someday.
I do too, because they were literally a thing for like 9 months. No. It wasn't even like a year, I think. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, where'd they go? Oh, I don't know. I think the entire time I was a kid, I think CDs were pretty much the main thing. I had cassettes because I was a poor ass little kid. I had the Space Jam soundtrack on cassette as well. Thank you very much. As well as Titanic, because I was a very effeminate child.
So that was probably on 8 cassettes, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was the entire movie. The last cassette was just nothing but like water splashing and screaming.
God.
Terrible.
Speaking of,
but no,
I have to break the flow. Did you hear they're bringing Space Jam into theaters next month?
What?
For the 20th anniversary.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
That's cool.
Oh my god, it's been 20 years. Holy shit, I'm old.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
So I don't even know.
You were talking about
where my tangent was going.
Okay, I didn't realize. I thought you were getting back on track. So, listeners,
I was never on track.
For people who wanted to get on track, so to speak, in the late 80s and early 90s, obviously MP3s and the like and streaming services were probably 10, 15 years away. And vinyl records, specifically 45 RPM records, which were singles for single songs, those had basically died out by then. So what's a person to do if they want to make a mixtape out of specific songs? They have a couple options. One, they have to own all of the albums in some format or another, and then painstakingly make their own mixtape on a cassette. Or they can use a very special thing called the Personic System.
What's the Personic System, Peter?
Let's find out.
This sounds like a bad 80s infomercial.
This is the worst commercial for anything. This is why it died. All right, so I learned recently that there was a service that popped up, like I said, in the late 80s. I don't know the exact year maybe 87, 88 or so. Very similar to Redbox today, if you will. It's kind of a comparison, except you could browse through thousands of songs and even listen to samples of them, and you could generate basically a playlist of the songs you liked. Then that it would turn this playlist that you choose from all these songs into a custom mixtape. And this did not require you to you know, own all the albums or anything. It's kind of regarded as the first on-demand music service, and as the precursor to all of the things we were just talking about a few minutes ago, like iTunes and Amazon and Spotify and all that. I will say really quick that I borrowed this topic from the podcast Stuff from the B-Side, which is they haven't been doing anything since about 2009. It's one of the many podcasts by HowStuffWorks.com, and it's actually probably the main podcast that for me inspired like the format of this show.
Nice.
That was kind of where I got the idea. But like I said, they had this kiosk, and usually it was like a music store or something like that. And you know, it had a screen, it had a keyboard. Obviously, for being in the late 80s, it was not the kind of quality that you would have now with Redbox or something. But it still got the job done, apparently. Before we go any further, Kyle, what kind of questions do you think would come up from this, from just hearing that concept? Like, what are your main questions?
I guess my main question...
How it works, I guess?
A little bit how it works. Like, does the system automatically... it would have to be pseudo-automatic because it's the 80s. Like... Is it like a jukebox where it just had like a bunch of CDs in it, and then it like or tapes, and then recorded specific songs to a deck and spit it out for you? Or did it like have to be like manually done by someone? Was there like a little guy inside the box?
Yeah, a guy sitting inside the box, and he just you have a microphone and you tell him what you want to what songs you want, and he just puts it all on the tape. Exactly. You come back like 3 hours later when he's done.
And he's dead because he suffocated because there's no air holes.
Jesus.
Yeah, mostly just kind of the mechanics of it. Like, how does that work?
So from what I can piece together, there's a few different places online where you can read about this system. Although there's not any one place that has like a lot of good information about it. So you kind of have to piece it together. From what I can gather, for one, it was not automatic. Basically, the kiosk itself would let you listen to clips of the songs and choose them and select them, and it would even reorder them to get like equal length on both sides of the cassette or something. And then it would print that out, and then you would hand it to like a clerk at the desk, and he would actually go and plug in the songs and generate the mixtape for you that way. So it was semi-automatic. It saves you the work of doing it yourself, but it's not like you just plug in the numbers and it does it for you.
So instead of you creating a mixtape, you're paying some, like, you know, minimum wage music store guy to do it for you, basically.
Although one thing I remember, I don't think I wrote it down, but one thing I remember reading was that whatever equipment they had set up to do this would write the mixtape at, like, 8x speed. So it's not like it would take 90 minutes or whatever for them to do it.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, he goes back, he comes back like an hour and a half later.
Yeah.
Here you go.
8x speed. That would be roughly 11 minutes or so for them to generate that, which isn't bad, especially for the time if you have no other options like that. That's actually pretty fast.
I was going to say, I remember when I used to rip CDs, I think that was about the rip speed of my original computer was like 7x. Slow as shit.
Yeah, I remember that.
It does say, I guess, if you care to know more about the mechanics of it, it does say that it contained 120 custom CDs, two drives that contained 60 CDs each that would record in CD digital audio Redbook format to a custom Dolby cassette track that could record the digital shits. I don't know. So yeah, it wasn't cassette to cassette, it was CD to cassette.
Yeah, I believe that.
It says you could get a custom printed label with a personalized title and listing of the song selections in the specified order on the little cassette tape. So that's kind of cool, I guess.
Oh, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, you have the custom labels too.
Everything else you described, that's pretty much it.
Yep. Pretty straightforward.
But yeah, I guess that's kind of interesting. They had like a sort of, I guess not, I shouldn't say automated because someone had to go back and do it, but they had a sophisticated system for it rather than you know, recording it 1-to-1 speed.
Right.
I guess my second question, because it's the 80s and everything was cheaper then, was about like how much did this cost? Did they charge per song? Was it just a flat rate for the mixtape?
The cost varied. From one article I saw, it said that prices ranged per song from 50 cents to $1.50, depending on how popular that song was.
That's not terrible.
I personally found that interesting because that's exactly how they do it nowadays with MP3s. I think the highest they go usually is like $1.29 or so for like stuff. But you can't, if something is like super obscure, you can sometimes get it for like, I don't know, 79 cents or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember like 3 or 4 years ago, iTunes changed their pricing system. So it wasn't always at 99 cents. It was like popular stuff was more, obscure stuff was less. So that's interesting that it was the same price back then, because you'd think with inflation or it would have been cheaper.
Yeah. On one of these articles, I was reading the comments on it, because there were a lot of... It actually gave me... Like I was telling you before we started recording, is that they actually gave me more specific information about this thing than some of the articles did, because people were commenting about like when they actually used the thing. I saw some people saying it costed $20 for a full tape. Someone else was saying that sometimes it would cost upwards of $30 for a tape.
Jeez.
I guess it depends partly on how popular the songs were and how many, like how long the songs were too, because then, you know, it depends on how many you can fit on the tape. Because I think a tape is what, 90 minutes?
Or something like that.
45 minutes on each side or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I guess you can do math and figure that out, listeners.
So, I mean, I guess that makes sense. I mean, just by the custom nature of it, it would probably be more expensive than, you know, buying a tape of a single artist. Just because it's like, you're customizing it, you're choosing your own stuff, you're forcing the poor, lowly music store clerk, who's probably acne-ridden, to kind of assemble it for you, which costs money. It's interesting, I guess. It's the thing I find out about it is, you said this was in the what, early 80s, mid 80s?
Late 80s, early 90s.
So by that point, you know, records were kind of dead, cassettes and CDs were the thing, but when cassettes and CDs were the thing, there was really no way to buy like a single song from an artist. You were forced to buy the entire album.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's really the only time period where this could have really come up and actually have been a thing, even for as short as it was.
Yeah, it seems like this was like the attempted replacement of buying singles, because singles, 45s, whatever, were always fairly cheap, and you got two songs, and it was a way to be like, oh, I like that song by that artist, I'm just going to get the single, because I don't want the whole album, so to speak.
Yeah.
And once singles kind of died, I guess this was their attempt at a replacement. I don't know, it seems...
I think they were definitely seeing some kind of, you know, market that could be filled, and kind of banking on a concept that people already understood of, you know, the mixtape. But just in a way that was, I guess I would, in some ways it was more convenient because you could pick and choose songs. Whereas, you know, any other way you couldn't do that unless you had all the CDs or all the tapes of those albums and those songs. So it did, true. I guess it did fill some kind of, you know, gap there, but I don't think it was even around for 5 years. I think it was only around for a couple of years before it went away.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. I'd be curious to ask my parents if they remember this system at all, but it sounds like it wasn't even very widespread as far as distribution, that it was only in like a handful of large stores and never really gained traction beyond that.
Right, yeah.
I think by this point, Tower Records was pretty popular as like a chain store for music, so it was probably in there.
Mm.
Speaking of which, I actually saw a really good documentary on, I think on HBO, about the rise of Tower Records. I forget, and the rise and fall, I should say, because they're gone now.
Mm.
But if I remember the name of it, I'll post it up for you guys on our page, as well as you, Peter, because it was really good.
Mm.
Talked about like the because it really was the first chain music store. They built one in San Francisco, then they built one in L.A., and then New York, and then poof, it's, you know, a nationwide craze. And then obviously after the era of digital, they died very quickly.
Right.
I remember there was a Tower Records by me in the marketplace in Tustin. And then one day, poof, it just wasn't there anymore. I was like, okay.
Weird.
So, yeah, this is the times, I guess.
Yes.
But anyways, sorry, random tangent, sort of. Slightly relevant, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this Personic system seems sort of interesting. It definitely seems niche, like maybe cost prohibitive. But the thing that's interesting about that is as I was saying, since singles were kind of dead at that point, I would imagine that cassettes and CDs weren't super cheap for the average consumer then, so it made buying music not like a, I don't know, not like a, you know, what's the word, a simple, quick thing. Like, you know, you had to save up for a week to, you know, of spending money to buy an album or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or buy a CD. Rather than like, oh, you know, I have some change in my pocket, I can buy a single. Or I have some change in my pocket, I can buy...
Oh, yeah, I see.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. So, I don't know if this is... Although this seems like a way for you to get sort of... a taste of different artists or whatever without having to buy the full albums of all those artists. It's,
yeah.
It's expense, you know, $20 to $30 didn't make it like as much of an easily consumable thing as singles were, or even really, you know, cassettes or record, or CDs at the time.
Yeah. And I don't, regarding the cost, I don't know on the top of my head what, you know, an average cassette or a CD cost in the late 80s. I'm going to guess it was less than $20 or $30.
Cause probably that's like 10.
Yeah, 15. Probably about what it costs now. But you know, cash, another thing I wanted to say about the cost was that, you know, we're saying, you know, it costs roughly the same as it does now, but, you know, remember $1.50 for a song, $1.50 in late 80s money is different from what it is now. So
true.
It kind of does go hand in hand with what you were saying, but you kind of do have to save up a little bit. I don't know how much specifically inflation has gone from then to now, but I would guess maybe, you know, if they had this now, it would probably cost, I don't know, $30+.
I was going to say, if they had it now, it would like record it to a vinyl record for you because hipsters. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Which would actually be kind of cool. I would pay for that.
Well, and we're jumping around a bit too. But actually, that's fine. There is something that reminds me, I was going to ask you in this, is that if this made a comeback now, being a little bit more robust in terms of the catalog of songs, and whatnot, and the technology being a bit better, and if it did generate it automatically rather than the teenager at the kiosk or at the desk, whatever. Do you think, for nostalgia's sake, would people actually use this thing to the point of it being profitable?
If I would say, honestly, it would depend on the format. Something that you couldn't easily create yourself, like a record, might be profitable.
Well, I'm thinking of tapes specifically.
But that's, yeah, I was going to say, that's the thing. It's so easy nowadays to even rip a CD or probably even burn a tape, because they still have blank tape decks out there.
Right.
That with today's technology, I wouldn't assume it would be very difficult for someone to kind of just do that on their own. The interesting thing about it back then was that it was allowing people to do something that they couldn't easily do on their own. But now, it's so easy and so easy to access music. I don't know if it would resonate as much, you know. Like, they would be like, why am I going to have a cassette when I can burn a CD, which is a better quality sound?
I'm sure some people would do it, but I just don't know if it would be popular enough if they brought it back.
I've assumed not. The one way I think it could be popular is for 80s and 90s kids who, you know, burned little cassette mixtapes for their lovers. If they had like some way to kind of recreate that,
yeah,
in an authentic format, that would be kind of cute. But
right,
cassettes are weird. Honestly, we could do a whole episode on them probably, but they've been around forever, but they were never like they were never seen as like a superior music format. It was always the portability, you know, you could play them in your car easily, yeah, more easily than a CD. Because back then CD players were big bulky things.
They're expensive.
Also true. So it's cassettes, as I think we discussed on a prior episode, were kind of just the natural evolution of 8-tracks.
Right.
You could play them in your car, but they were never, but just like 8-tracks, they were never great quality. In fact, I think 8-tracks were technically superior because the tape was larger. Sorry, I'm like railing against cassettes now, but yeah, that's kind of just my whole point is if they brought it back, I would see it only working in a limited fashion because not a lot of people have a sort of longing for cassettes. Although, I swear to God, I did actually see you can buy cassettes at Urban Outfitters last time I was there. I was like, what
like
the
an
fuck?
Album or something on a cassette?
Yes. Yes. Cassettes are back. Because everything is bad and horrible and we don't deserve good things. I mean, I completely understand records, the tangibility of it.
Yeah.
People can argue that the sound is better.
Yeah.
But there's nothing better about cassette. It's literally going back to an inferior format, both in sound quality, the fact that they tangle, the fact that they fucking melt. Well, I guess so do vinyl records.
Yeah.
It's like the ultimate in hipsterness. It's like going back to older technology that isn't... purely for nostalgia's sake, because there is nothing superior about it.
That's kind of what I was getting at with that scenario, is it, like the audience for that would pretty much just be hipsters.
True.
Now, but I don't see it as being practical because no one has a tape player. So
also very, very true. Yeah, finding a tape player nowadays is not easy, unless you're like Goodwill. Now, as I said before, if they could convert that into a where you can have a custom vinyl record ripped, that would be kind of dope because of the, I guess, you know, the average person can't just create a vinyl record in their, you know, house.
Right.
Average person can create a mixtape from a CD or a mixtape from a cassette in their house. Vinyl records are a whole different beast. So having a service where you can custom make a vinyl record, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. That's an interesting idea.
I don't exactly know how that would work, but to even like have where you can like record your voice in between songs or something, that would be cool. Like as like a gift to give someone. I think I stumbled on something.
That reminds
me. $1 million idea.
Going back to the actual Parsonic system.
Yes.
Before I forget to mention this. So along with choosing what songs to have on their mixtape, there was also like a library of sound effects that you could choose from. So a lot of people were recalling that they said, oh, I put, you know, a toilet flushing at the end of the mixtape or something, or a buzzsaw in the middle of, you know, metal songs or something. So you could, like, buffer the songs with sound effects for what it was worth. People seemed to enjoy doing that for some reason. So, yeah, in your world where you have the vinyl version of the Parsonic system, I guess you could record yourself. That'd be funny.
True. I just record nothing but, like, bodily sounds.
I expect nothing less of you.
Exactly. So, yeah, I guess in going back to the original topic, I understand how this thing didn't really take off, but at the same time, it felt like that there needed to be some hole filled of, like, cheap, consumable music.
Yeah.
And this definitely wasn't the way to do it, but for a long time, if you think about it, because vinyl kind of died out in the mid-80s, it wasn't until iTunes and Napster in, like, what, the early 2000s, maybe, that we got individually consumable songs. So for basically 15, almost 20 years, there was no way to buy individual songs. You had to buy the entire album. And that's kind of sad that in that 15 years, no one thought of us of a better way other than hit clips of a better way to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I guess singles are dead. Guess we're not going to replace them with anything. You know, they could have developed a single version of CDs, like little tiny CDs that have had individual songs or hell, cassettes.
There were actually both of those things. I did a little research, because one of I don't know anything about them really, And I don't think they were really popular at all. I think they're kind of more obscure formats, but I remember looking that up. Actually, that it did cross my mind. I was like, I wonder if that was a thing, and it actually was. Anyway, I'm curious to know, I might research again and see if there were other technologies or services that came out in that 15, 20 year period that you were just mentioning. Because that's a long time.
I'm sure
you would think there's got to be at least someone else who tried something.
I'm sure there was, but it, as you said, it sounded like none of them really took off, because I don't know if it's the, you know, the cost of CDs came down, or the 90s were kind of an economic boom time, so maybe people was just like, fuck it, I'll buy the whole album I can afford to. I don't know. That's kind of interesting. But yeah, it's crazy to think for that span of time, there was no popular way of individually consuming songs. It was basically you buy the album or you don't get a song you want.
So, should we talk about the reasons that it died?
Failed. Yes. Yeah. Yes, we should.
I mean, beyond the obvious that it's slightly impractical. Mm-hmm. Overall, the big thing that seemed to kill this was music licensing.
Mm.
For starters, I read that some record labels like CBS and RCA, which were pretty big labels, I think, back then, they did not participate. So right there, you have a big catalog of songs that are not even available from the get-go. But also with, you know, the cost of licensing certain songs, other record labels that did participate, they didn't necessarily allow the Personic system to include like recent stuff or anything that was super popular because it would be too expensive. You know, Personics probably didn't want to pay that. So I, in the comments, as I was mentioning earlier, that people were recalling using this thing, a few people said that they had trouble finding stuff that was anything recent or really popular. It was kind of like a lot of B-side type songs.
Yeah.
So that kind of, that in itself kind of limits, you know, how many times you use it. A couple different people actually said, you know, even with all the thousands of songs they had, I couldn't come up with more than one mixtape worth of stuff out of it because there just wasn't enough stuff they were interested in, I guess.
Yeah, and lack of versatile quantity would kill any music service. There's plenty of digital music services that died for that very same reason.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's kind of a death knell for any service. It's, you know, if you don't have the popular stuff people want because of licensing, it's like, why would they want B-side crap?
Exactly. One person in the comments said that they were actually a technician for Personics.
Huh.
And they basically said, yeah, basically it went under because of licensing issues. And apparently at some point they had the Sony catalog of music, but they eventually dropped it. And basically at that point, that was like, okay, it's done. Because that's also a huge record label. So I mean, if you lose that, then you're pretty much done.
Yeah.
So I think maybe whichever labels at the beginning saw some potential in this, I think there ended up just being a lot of issues of like they couldn't really keep track of which ones were being purchased, and whatnot, and like maybe they just weren't getting enough money out of it to make it worthwhile, so they just, you know, it just went under because of that, which is too bad, but you know, this. The services can only do so much, especially at the time. The technology could only go so far. It's not like they could just, you know, do a software update and all of a sudden they have, you know, 10,000 more songs. You know, it's not, it doesn't work like that. Although I will say for the time, the technology of it is actually
fairly
sophisticated because, like I said, you had like the screen interface with inputs like the keyboard or whatever. And you could scroll through, you know, thousands of songs and play clips of them. So to me, for the time, that's actually pretty good conceptually. But I guess, you know, when you have all these other issues fighting against you, it kind of kills it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a combination of lack of distribution, lack of quality songs, that's like guaranteed not success.
So beyond this, I know we've discussed at length previously on the show, you know, about the ubiquity of stuff like Spotify and iTunes and Amazon, whatever have you, Google Music. I wonder if there's if we'll ever reach a point technologically speaking where we'll go back somewhat to physical media where like this sort of idea could come back in some form. I know we already kind of talked about it a little bit, like just, you know, in a fantasy world, but like realistically, do you see this being any like in not even cassettes, just something, you know what I mean?
I don't know, because as much as so many things are going digital, it seems like the rate at which things are going digital are kind of giving people pause where they want to in some way go back to physicality. I mean, another example, I guess, would be ebooks. Everyone's like, oh, ebooks are out. The death of the book is inevitable. Yet it's been proven that ebook sales have actually even gone down recently and that book sales have maintained steady because people like the tangibility of a book, just like people like the tangibility of a record or a cassette or a CD or whatever.
Well, I guess you get that initial spike of the... it's new? What's the word? I can't think of the word, but basically when something's new and you're like, oh man, this is the greatest thing ever. And then after a while, you're like, oh, well, actually, physical books are better and they're more practical in some ways.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, like, our nostalgia for physical formats, is it just nostalgia because it's what we used to have, or is it a rejection of the fast-paced digitalization of everything, of books, of music, of movies? Or is that just going to, you know, eventually become the norm where people are going to be like, I never grew up with physical media, so I don't know to be nostalgic for it and therefore want it.
Yeah, I don't know. In the one hand, I can see it kind of just being digital forever. But on the other hand, I think it's really short-sighted to say that we'll always be using these same methods even 10, 20 years from now.
True.
There's going to be new things always to replace the other stuff. So I don't know exactly what it will be. I kind of suspect that we're not going to see like a kiosk in a store again of something like this, because anytime you have any kind of service, it's always the best version of that is going to be when you can do it from home. And we're seeing that with, you know, store like Amazon, like doing 1 hour shipping, whatever the fuck. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of commerce is going in that direction. So I don't think it's going to go back necessarily. And even like, as I, at the beginning, I kind of compared this to Redbox, which is, I think, a good comparison, but I mean, isn't Redbox kind of dying out as well? I don't know, but people, I know that it's not as popular as it used to be.
With Netflix and Amazon and stuff, people aren't even really renting movies like they used to. I mean, hell, yeah. Netflix just got Zootopia up on their library. And I'm like, that movie came out like on DVD like 2 or 3 months ago. So the fact that these streaming services are getting these new release movies quicker and quicker are going to slowly make renting movies irrelevant, because people are going to be like, well, I'll just wait a month for it to be on streaming, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't rented a movie since Blockbuster died. Speaking of which, oh my god, I forgot to tell you, I think it was either on Reddit or on Imgur or something, there was a post that was fairly popular where someone straight up found a Blockbuster store that was like abandoned, but they never removed the merchandise from the store.
Oh, weird.
So he went inside and it was literally just like a museum. Of like, wow. You see the wall of all the movies that were left, the video games, and it was just freaky to think, like, oh my god, this was like a thing 10 years ago.
Wow.
And this is like somehow frozen in time. It's pretty crazy.
Huh. That's interesting.
I used to love Blockbuster, and then their prices got expensive, and then I remember they came out with their own sort of movies by mail service.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Netflix. And we tried it, and I remember it was just very not successful. I mean, you'd say, I want this new movie that came out. It'd be like, oh yeah, you have to wait like 2 to 3 weeks to get it. It's like, what the
Jeez.
Fuck? Because, you know, they had limited quantity or whatever.
I'm pretty sure Blockbuster even had their own version of Redbox too, right?
I'm
almost positive they did. Like, even after the stores were gone, they were doing that, but I don't know if that's around anymore.
I think so. I think I remember that. I vaguely. But even Redbox, I swear to God, I've never used Redbox. I don't know about you.
My family's used it a handful of times. And it works fine and everything. And you can, even if, especially if you get like a code or something online, I mean, you can get a movie for like a dollar for a day or two. So it's not bad. That's good. Just.
And then rip it.
Takes a little, takes a little bit more thought, I guess, than just finding something on Netflix. Because you don't, you have to go to the store and actually go grab it.
True.
Which, you know, 15 years ago, people would be like, well, what's wrong with that? But now everyone's like, well, I don't want to get up off my ass.
Yeah, exactly. That's another conversation for another day, is how technology is kind of just making people not want to interact with the world anymore. You know, and I have to admit, in certain ways, I'm the same way. There's been many times where I've ordered something online and it wasn't what I wanted. And I was like, oh, I have to return this in store. That requires human contact. Nope. Guess I'm keeping it. Like, straight up. And it's sad because that's how people think now. That's why I like Amazon's returns, because you just say, I want to return this, and then the mail guy just comes and picks it up. So yeah, I think we've kind of dived into about as deep as we can with this Personics system. Yeah, I mean, that kind of got me interested in these other obscure formats, so maybe that can be like a, I don't know, ongoing thing where we discuss obscure music formats, because it's fun.
I
like technology.
I enjoy when we find these little obscure technological things in music history.
Yeah, like just, like the 45s you could play in your car, like that silly as shit, but it was fun.
Yeah, stuff like that. I love stuff like that, just because it's so weird too. And it was a thing, even though people wouldn't even believe that. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/getyourfunk, or you can what is it called? Follow us on soundcloud.com/getyourfunk or on mixcloud.com/getyourfunk.
Yay.
Mixcloud doesn't let you comment, from what I can tell, but you can on SoundCloud. So if you're listening there, comment on the track and tell us if you liked it or if you hated it, or if you have any opinions about anything. We just want to hear from you because we're lonely. If you have suggestions for new topics we can do, go ahead, obviously, and let us know. Until next time, we hope to hear you from you somewhere, but if not, you'll hear us next time on Funk Radio. Did we even introduce ourselves at the beginning?
No, nope. I don't think we did. This is, if you couldn't tell, this has been your host, Kyle.
And this has been your host, Peter.
Thanks, listeners. Join us next time. We love you. Bye.
Goodbye.